कृष्णाय तोत्रवेत्रैकपाणय ज्ञान मुद्राय कृष्णाय गीतामृत दुहे नमः। हरे कृष्णा। वेलकम बैक टू अवर भगवद्गीता भक्ति शास्त्री कोर्स। वी आर इन द लास्ट पार्ट ऑफ द 10th चैप्टर नाउ। वी कंप्लीटेड टिल वर्स इज 27। सो लेट्स हैव अ लुक क्विक ओवरव्यू ऑफ द 10th चैप्टर बिफोर वी मूव अहेड। This not chapter title is Vibhuti Yoga. So first Krishna says how it is difficult to know him in verses 1 to 7. Then 8 to 12 he say 8 to 11 he states how he can be known through bhakti. That is the Chatushloki Gita. Then 13 to 18 Arjuna acknowledges Krishna's glories and then asks to know about them more, especially about how he has pervaded material existence. So then 19 to 42 is the concept of Vibhuti Yoga that is being described. So how to know Krishna through his vibhutis. So let's look at 10.38. We stopped at 37 earlier.
Dando damayatam asmi nitirasmi jigeshatam maunam chaiva asmi guhyanam jnanam jnanavatam aham.
So dando damayatam asmi, that damayatam is to suppress, to control, to bring on the right track. So there are many ways of bringing people on the right track. So the most powerful among them, in the sense that the strongest, is danda. So it's good if you could convince people by good advice and counsel and warnings, but sometimes that, when that doesn't work, and the last resort often has to be punishment. And that's why in all cultures, all over the world, there have been some strong means of punishment. Maybe some jails or some other places for punishment and reformation. So, dando damayatam asmi, that danda. These people are given danda. That danda is the strongest, the last resort for punishing people. And Krishna says, I am danda. So this doesn't mean that Krishna wants to give danda to everyone. That is not the point of this verse. Here, the vibhuti of Krishna is being talked about, and that which is the most powerful, the most attractive, the most influential among various manifestations is being emphasized. So danda is a forceful way of making a point, especially when the point is not made by any other way.
Niti rasmi jigishatam.
So among the jigishatam means those who seek victory. I am morality. Niti rasmi jigishatam. So now, sometimes it is said that in war and love, everything is fair. So that is a common saying in the Western literature. And the idea is that actually what we want, once we want victory, whatever it takes, we will do to get victory. Now that attitude might be there, but Krishna doesn't recommend that attitude. He says, yes, we want victory, but you should seek victory by virtuous means. That is the best. Now, there are, it's said to be the three kinds of nitis. There is Brihaspati Niti, there is Shukra Niti, and there is Kanika Niti. So, what are these? Brihaspati, as we know, is the council, the minister, the priest of the devatas. So, Brihaspati Niti is choose good means and choose good ends. So, strive for good ends by good means. That is Brihaspati Niti. Then there is Shukra Niti. Shukra Niti is that as long as the ends are good, then the means don't matter. One can use bad means also for good ends. And then Kanika Niti is don't care about ends, don't care about goods, about means, just strive for your own protection and pleasure and power. That's all. So Kanika was a Brahmana friend of Shakuni, and when Shakuni was using his devious tactics against the Pandavas, so at that time Dhritarashtra was feeling some pangs of conscience. He says, this is not proper, we should not be doing like this. So at that time Shakuni brought Kanika, and Kanika gave some advice. He says, you know, don't worry about all these things. Ultimately, our survival and our prosperity is what is all important. And for that purpose, whatever is required can be taken. Now, among these three, Kanika is, you know, that means one, even the ends are good, neither the ends are good nor the means are good, but just one concerns only one's self-interest. That's all. So that is a very bad thing, and that should be definitely avoided. Preferable always is Brihaspati Niti, that seek good means, good ends by good means. And that's what Krishna tries to do in the Mahabharata also. First of all, he tries his best to avoid war, and he's ready to even accept five villages. That's all that is required. He says, if that's all that you give me, that's where you can avoid the war. But then Kauravas refuse that, and then the Kauravas start using devious tricks, even in the war field. Then Krishna also uses to use those devious tricks, and therefore he goes and checks. He uses sometimes. So that's why some of the principal warriors on the Kaurava side, they are killed by what seems to be a devious means. So that is actually the point of the Shukraniti. So Shukraniti is used because the Shukraniti is required at times. So the means are, the ends are good. So the Yudhishthira Maharaj is Dharmaraj, and for the sake of bringing about Dharma, his victory is important. So how that victory is to be achieved, that may vary according to time, place, circumstance. And that's what is talked about over here. So, and that's what is shown in the Mahabharata. Sometimes some seemingly unethical means may have to be used if the ends are ethical. Now this is of course exceptional, this is not the standard. And especially Shathoshatyam, when the enemy is doing that, then one may have no alternative, one may have to do that. But in general, that is not what is recommended. So here the focus is on the best way would be that if you want victory, strive for victory, but by ethical means. That means the Brihaspati Niti is the best. And Krishna says that those who achieve victory by virtuous means, they are the most, their power represents me, their power is my vibhuti. Then after that, Maunam Chaivasmi Guhiyanam. So Maunam Chaivasmi Guhiyanam. So Guhiya means secret. So those who want to maintain secrets, the best way to maintain the secret is to keep silent. You know, many people think, you know, see, I know a secret, and I'll tell only to you, don't tell anyone, okay? So when we speak like that, many times when people come to know a secret, their pleasure comes not from knowing the secret, but from telling other that I know the secret. And then what happens, then it becomes a parampara of people who tell, don't tell this to anyone. And then what happens, this secret become public news. So if you want to maintain a secret, then Maunam Chaiva Asmi Guhiyana. Maunam, be confidential, don't speak only. That is the best way to maintain secrets. And then Jnanam Jnanavatamaham. So among knowledgeable people, knowledge is the most important virtue. So Jnanam Jnanavatamaham. Now of the wise, I'm wisdom. So what distinguishes the wise people is their wisdom. If a person who is known to be very wise and suddenly starts speaking foolishly, then that person will not have so much value. So that wisdom that attracts people to the wise, that wisdom is the opulence of Krishna. And after describing this, Krishna moves forward and then he starts giving the conclusion of the whole section. So the last four verses are summary sort of verses. Yachapi sarvabhutanam bijam tadaham arjuna tadastivina yatsyan mayabhutam characharam. So yachapi sarvabhutanam, that for all living beings I am the bija. Bijam tadaham arjuna, I am the seed for all living beings. And natadastivina yatsyan, that without mayabhutam characharam, without me actually nothing can exist. So we've discussed earlier how Krishna is the source of everything. Krishna is the sustainer of everything. That has been discussed in 7th chapter, 9th chapter again. And now Krishna is reiterating that. So actually speaking, yes, Krishna has identified himself with some opulences in this world. And right in the beginning only he has said that I am going to you speak pradhanyata, only a few of the opulences. Now when Krishna says that, say among the fish I am the shark, now that means does that only the shark come from Krishna and others don't come from Krishna? Or is it that Krishna has some special affection for shark and no affection for anyone else? No, nothing like that. What it simply means is that particular fish attracts attention because of its speed, its power, its ferocity. So that attention which is there, which is attracting people, that power, that opulence is a manifestation of Krishna. So lest one start restricting Krishna to specific manifestations alone and not seeing his connection with everything. Krishna clarifies in this verse saying that actually everything is sustained by me. The existence of nothing is possible without me. Not only am I the source of everything, but I am also the sustainer of everything. So after that, Krishna will now say that, okay, everything comes from me, but within that there are certain specific things which are my vibhutis. But even the vibhutis are endless. That's what he was stated in this verse. Nantosti mama divyanam vibhutinam parantapa eshutuddeshatah prokto vibhoter vistaromaya. Nantosti, there is no end to what? Mama divyanam, my divine opulences. Vibhutinam parantapa, that my divine opulences, there is no end to them. Eshutuddeshatah prokto, that of that uddeshata. Uddeshata means, as an example, I have spoken a few things. Vibhuter vistaro maya. Vibhuter vistaro maya. My vibhuti is vistar, expanded immensely. The vibhuti is very, very vast, and I have spoken just a few samples of it. So what Krishna has said at the start of the chapter, he is repeating now, and not at the start of the chapter, at the start of this section. Pradhanitah kru sreshtha. So similarly, so whatever Arjuna I have spoken to you, this is a sample. So Krishna gives a sample to help us to understand the broad principle. So now in this world also, we will find certain things which attract us. So according to our culture, according to our time, place, circumstance, when certain things are attractive, we need to understand that that attraction is a manifestation of Krishna's opulence. So now here we have to understand an important principle. See, there is a cultural and there is a spiritual. The cultural can be specific, the spiritual is universal. And the spiritual can manifest in different ways culturally. What does that mean? That means Krishna is talking about the spiritual principle that God manifest, God's opulence is manifest in this world through the extraordinary manifestations of this world. So, and he is giving man those extraordinary manifestations as per the cultural and cosmological understanding of his times. Now, of course, the Vedic understanding is not just of his times. That means it's not that Indra is just a god who existed 5000 years ago and doesn't exist now, or that any of the other people who are there, Garuda and all those, they are not existing now. No, they exist now, even now, and they're still a part of the cosmology, but they may not be a part of our conceptual framework right now, because we have been educated in a different way. Now, as we keep studying the Vedic scriptures, gradually our conceptual framework will change, and then we will be able to relate with all these, and then we will be able to understand how these are the opulences of Krishna. Right now, see, every example has a particular purpose. Sometimes, if there are some remote people who live in some part of India who have never heard of, say, some game like tennis, and then they hear about some player, Nadal or Federer, who are 15, 16 times they have won Grand Slams, and they hear some commentator saying, now this player has as much a fighting spirit like Nadal. Like whom? It makes no sense to them. So the purpose of an example is to make the unfamiliar familiar. The purpose of then a concept is unfamiliar. To make it familiar, an example is given. But if the example itself is unfamiliar, then the concept doesn't become familiar to the example. Then actually, the work increases double. That means, firstly, we have to understand, we have to come to know what is the example. Okay, and then I have to understand what is the concept. And then the work becomes double that way. So the work was meant to decrease, but the work can increase sometimes. If the examples that we are giving are unfamiliar. And that's why Srila Prabhupada would often give examples that people would understand. So for example, he would say that yajna, how do you understand the concept of yajna? You know, for Western people, for his Western audience, the idea of a fire sacrifice was very exotic. The idea that, oh, you lit a fire and appease some gods. There's not much of that sort of thing which they were ever familiar with. So then Prabhupada, familiar with saying, this is basically like tax. There's a universal government and we have to pay tribute to the universal government. Just as we pay tax to our government. So Prabhupada gave the example of a tax. So similarly, now, what is the ecstasy of Vaikuntha? So, what is the ecstasy of chanting Hare Krishna and ecstasy of returning back to Vaikuntha? Now, the scriptures may say that the ecstasy of Vaikuntha is 1,000 times more than the ecstasy of Brahmanand. What is Brahmanand? So, what was told to be explained, so the Vaikuntha Ananda is unfamiliar. And if we say that is 1,000 times Brahmanand, Brahmanand is all unfamiliar to people. So, when we explain one unfamiliar concept with another unfamiliar concept, then we don't make the unfamiliar familiar, we double the unfamiliarity. So, that's why Prabhupada would give example. Say, one time, Prabhupada, what is the ecstasy of in Vaikuntha? Of going to Vaikuntha? So, Prabhupada said, it is like floating in an ocean of LSD. Floating. Yes, I want to go to Vaikuntha. That's what the audience said at that time. So, now, we know one of the offenses against the holy name is to give some mundane interpretation of the holy name. So, is comparing Vaikuntha to an ocean of LSD and a material interpretation? No. Material interpretation is offensive when the material interpretation is reductive. Reductive means that the spiritual is reduced down to the material. Then it becomes offensive. So, for example, if the concept of deity is reduced down to, it's just a stone representation which reminds us of the absolute truth. So, when the spiritual is brought down to the material, when it is reduced and it said there is no higher reality, why do you feel good when you chant Hare Krishna? Because, there are certain kind of chemicals that are fired in the brain. And those chemicals make a person feel good. Now, that may be a part of the process, that may happen. But that's not all that there is to it. Actually, beyond whatever is happening in the brain chemicals, beyond the whole bodily setup, there is the soul. And the soul is being activated and its natural joyfulness is being aroused. So therefore, actually speaking, the important point is to be relevant. So Prabhupada was remarkably relevant. The principle that Krishna is talking about over here is that whatever attracts people, that manifests his opulence. And so similarly, in today's times, there may be different things that may attract people. And then, when people are attracted, we have to be able to have our jnana chakshu, our eyes of knowledge clear enough to see that actually, this is an opulence of Krishna. And this opulence of Krishna is manifested in this person in this way. And then say, for example, there may be a very famous musician who attracts thousands and thousands and millions of people with music. Now that musician's opulence is actually Krishna manifesting opulence through that person. So similarly, it may be sports stars, it may be business tycoon, business magnates, it may be different kinds of people. So at one level we could just say all this is just Maya. And that's okay. That's one way of looking at it. But that's where people's consciousness is. We can't just dismiss the fact that most people are conscious of material things. So that if Arjuna had adopted such a dismissive attitude, yes, everything material is Maya, is rejected. Then there would have been no need for the Vibhuti Yoga chapter. And if Krishna had wanted us to adopt that approach, then Krishna would also not answer. You know, Keshu Keshu Je Bhaveshu. Arjuna is asking, you know, how can I remember you? How can you be remembered through material manifestation? Yes, actually the material is illusion. Forget it. A thing beyond matter to spirit. Krishna does not say like that. Krishna gives examples by which Arjuna can remember. So for us also, you know, when Prabhupada was traveling in a plane, and that time there was a Charlie Chaplin movie. So Prabhupada is laughing at the jokes over there. And then when devotees ask that, you know, Prabhupada, the general devotee's idea is anything that you can't see explicitly connect with Krishna, that must be Maya. So why Prabhupada, they're bewildered. Prabhupada watching a Charlie Chaplin movie and laughing and laugh. Prabhupada was enjoying it. And then he asked Prabhupada. Prabhupada said that actually Charlie Chaplin's humor is a manifestation of Krishna. You know, Krishna's capacity for humor is manifested in a very small fragmental way through Charlie Chaplin. So this is the view of connection. Prabhupada says his humor is original and it is a spark of Krishna. Krishna's qualities. So that means the karmi way would be of looking at things would be, oh, this humor is so nice. Let's enjoy, enjoy, enjoy. And don't think of anything else. Laugh so that you so that you can just forget your sufferings. And many people say that you have to laugh to stop from crying. And material life makes us miserable and we want to cry, so forget that, just laugh, laugh, laugh away. And the other extreme, that is the karmi way of looking at things. The jnani way of looking at things would be, hey, this is all illusion. So all place of suffering, and this laughter is also a part of suffering. Part of the illusion which will perpetuate our suffering. But the bhakta way is to see the connection, to see the connection between things and Krishna. So that is the that is the vibhuti of Krishna that is manifesting through a particular person. Now we don't go and start watching Charlie Chaplin movies to think, oh, let me see the vibhuti of Krishna through that. No, that is not the only way to see Krishna's vibhuti. You know, we can remember Krishna even by going to the temple and by seeing the deities and by reading about Krishna's pastimes. That is a direct way, and that is the primarily recommended way. But the point is that Krishna consciousness doesn't have to be limited only to activities that are explicitly Krishna conscious. Means going to the temple, studying the scriptures, chanting the holy names, associating with devotees, traveling to pilgrimages. So these are explicitly devotional activities. And they help us definitely in practicing Krishna consciousness, in becoming Krishna conscious. And they are vital. But we shouldn't pigeonhole Krishna consciousness only into these activities. Krishna consciousness extends everywhere. The jurisdiction of Krishna consciousness is everywhere, as Prabhupada said in the 7th chapter. So now, how can we be Krishna conscious in what we are anyway conscious of? See, when we are in the world, at that time, there will be certain things which we will be conscious of just by the fact that we are in the world. There are certain politicians, there are certain sports stars, there are certain movie stars. They are constantly in the news. People are talking about them. So, it's not that we have to delight in those things constantly. But it's not that we have to reject all of them entirely as mundane gossip. If there are times when we are exposed to those, we are interacting with those things in some way or the other, then we try to see the Krishna factor. So, even in the material manifestations, whatever is extraordinary in our times, that would be a manifestation of Krishna. That would be a manifestation of Krishna. So, how is it a manifestation of Krishna? Because in this particular generation, in this culture, that person or that object is attracting people's attention. And that capacity to attract people's attention is ultimately coming from Krishna. So, we don't want to get specifically attracted to that manifestation. But whatever attraction is by any way there, either in our mind or in people's mind, because of which our consciousness or attention also goes sometimes there, then we connect that to Krishna. So, often we have to illustrate eternal principles with contextual examples. So, the examples that are given in the Bhagavad Gita of Krishna's Vibhuti, they are also factual. That means there's a part of the Vedic cosmology which is always true, but they are not what people are familiar with right now. So, we can give examples of Krishna's Vibhuti based on what is familiar, and through that help people to come closer to Krishna. And that way, they can move, they can gradually become Krishna conscious. So this is the principle of vibhuti. So whatever attracts people, we connect that with Krishna. And by connecting that with Krishna, we become Krishna conscious through the things of which we are anyway conscious. So if we are students and we are in a class, and there's a student who is brilliant, you know, that student answers all the questions. Now, naturally that person will be attracted to others, will be attracted to the others. So then, that excellent student, we can see that this student's intelligence is actually manifestation of Krishna. So if this student can attract so many people, then how much more can Krishna attract? And when I develop my relationship with Krishna, how much joy will be there in that relationship? Like that we can contemplate and we can move closer to Krishna through that. So the whole process of Bhakti Yoga is the process of not rejection but connection. And that connection of matter with spirit is revealed in a beautiful way through this chapter of Vibhuti Yoga. So now Krishna will tell in the last verse, in the last but one verse of this chapter, of how he will be, how actually everything is but a spark of his splendor. Let's look at this verse.
Yad yad vibhuti mat sattvam shri madurjitam eva va tatta deva avagachatvam mama tejomsh sambhava yad yad vibhuti mat sattvam shri mad yad yad vibhuti mat sattvam.
So wherever one sees vibhuti, shrimad urjitam eva va. So whatever existence is, wherever it is beautiful, Srimad is beautiful, like we have the word Srimad Bhagavatam. So the Bhagavatam is the book of the is the book about Bhagavan, and Srimad is that which is filled with beauty, is the beauty of the intimate love of the Lord with his devotees. Urjitam eva va, that is beautiful, that is glorious, and that all that is beautiful, all that is opulent, all that is beautiful, all that is glorious, that is mama teja amsha sambhavam. It is manifesting mama teja amsha, my effulgence, a spark, a fragment, a spark. It is but a spark of my splendor. So a devotee, if we are attracted only to the sparks will give us a little pleasure, but that pleasure will soon end. And then we will be left with nothing. So instead of being attracted to the sparks, we let the sparks remind us of the whole, and then redirect our attraction to the whole. If we keep being attracted to the sparks separate from the whole, then we will have infinite longings. I want this, this attractive. We can have infinite longings, but instead of that, we can be longing for the infinite. Instead of infinite longings, one thing, second thing, third thing, fourth thing, shall go on forever. A devotee instead chooses longing for the infinite. The infinite has all the attractive things that are present in different people. In one place, all of them are present. So let us long for the infinite. And that is the essential message of this chapter. So we are anyway attracted to things of this world. So rise from longing for infinite longings to longing for the infinite, and in this way we can redirect our consciousness towards Krishna through gradual purification. Now after this, Krishna will describe actually what is the need for all this opulence description.
Athava bahunaitena kim jnatena tava arjuna vishthabhyaham idam kritsnam ekamshena stito jagat. Athava,
However, otherwise, you know, or bahunaitena, bahu means many, etena this, you know, many like this, many of these I can talk about, but kim gyatena, what is the use of knowing all of it, Arjuna? Just understand one thing,
vishtabhyaham idam kritsnam,
vishtabhya means pervaded, vishtabhyaham idam kritsnam, idam is this world, kritsnam is completely, the word kritsnam is different from krishnam. The word Kritsnam has come many times in the Gita. In the fourth chapter it has come. यस्य सर्वे समारंभा काम संकल्प वर्जिता ज्ञानाग्द कर्माणि तमाहु पंडितं बुधा. नो, इट्स नॉट. देयर मेनी अदर प्लेसेस. तप्त कर्माणि तमाहु सर्वे काम संकल्प वर्जिता. No, yeah, karmanya, the verse before that is 4.19, 4.18 is akarmanya karmaya pashyet karmani cha karmaya sabuddhiman manusheshu sayuktaha kritsna karma krit. Kritsna karma krit, kritsna karma is all activities. That person may engage in all activities, that person will stay unbound if the person has proper understanding and while acting. Similarly, that was in the 4th chapter, 7th chapter also, kritsna, the word has been used. So एतद् योनीनि भूतानि सर्वाणि त्युपधारय अहम् कृष्णस्य जगतः प्रभव प्रलयस्तथा. सो देयर आल्सो इन द 7th चैप्टर आफ्टर डिस्क्राइबिंग हाउ ही इज आल्सो मटेरियल एंड स्पिरिचुअल एनर्जी 7.4 एंड 5 एंड 7.76 कृष्णा सेज दैट अहम् कृष्णस्य जगतः फॉर द होल वर्ल्ड आई एम द प्रभव एंड आई एम द प्रलय आई एम द सोर्स एंड आई एम द फाइनल डेस्टिनेशन फाइनल शेल्टर. So Krishna is different from Krishna. So he is saying Ekamshi. Actually he is saying that Ekamshi nastato jagat. So Ishtabhyaham idam Krishnam. The whole of existence is pervaded by just one fraction of mind. Ekamshi. No. So what does this refer to? Ekamshi nastato jagat. Let us look at this. I pervade all of existence with just one fragment of mine. So this has multiple meanings, but one specific meaning is how Krishna is the pervading the universe through the super soul. We know there are many manifestings of Vishnu. There is Mahavishnu, Garbho Daksha Vishnu, Shiro Daksha Vishnu. So among all these, there is the manifestation of Krishna in the form of the Kshirodakshaya Vishnu, who is the greatest manifestation, who is the all-pervading manifestation. So let's look at this. This is a diagrammatic description about how Krishna pervades all of existence. So here we'll see that Krishna is the cause of all causes and sarva karana karanam. From Krishna comes Balarama. This is based on the Bhagavatam and also further elaborated in Chaitanya Charitamrita. So from Balaramji there are four expansions. They are called the Chaturviva, Vasudev, Sankarshana, Pradyumna and Aniruddha. Now from Sankarshan comes Narayana. And from Narayana comes the second quadruple expansion. Second set of four expansions, that is the second Vasudev, Sankarshan, Pradyumna and Aniruddha. Now all this is actually in the spiritual world. And these are eternal manifestations. Now beyond that, there are the manifestations who are called the Purusha Avataras. These are manifestations who interact with Prakriti. They don't get contaminated by Prakriti. They are still transcendental. But they interact with material nature. The other manifestations, Balaramji and Vasudev Sankarshan Pradyumna, they don't directly interact with material nature. So there is Mahavishnu, then there is Garbho Daksha Vishnu, and then there is Kshiro Daksha Vishnu. So Mahavishnu is the person. Mahavishnu is the super soul of, he is also called as Karano Dakshaya Vishnu. Mahavishnu is the super soul of all of existence. Not the not just of one universe, but all universes. So it is from him that everything comes along. Then Garbho Dakshaya Vishnu is the super soul of each universe. Now he expands from Mahavishnu's body, the pores of the universes come out, and then Mahavishnu expands as the Garbho Dakshaya Vishnu and is present in expanded form in that in each universe. And then beyond that is Shirodakshaya Vishnu. Shirodakshaya Vishnu is the Paramatma. So he's present at the top above Brahmaloka also in the on the next bank, the Shir Sagar. But along with that, he's also present as the super soul in the heart of all living beings. So that is Shirodakshaya Vishnu. So now Krishna is saying this Shirodakshaya Vishnu is all pervading. How is he all pervading? Because the super soul exists. Andantarastha Paramanu Chayantarastham Paramanu. It's present in the heart of all living beings, it's present in every atom. So now if you look back at this, and Krishna will understand, Eka Amsha. Eka Amsha. Look at where Krishna is. When we look at where Krishna is, and from there, we come down all the way to, Krishna has so many expansions, out of it, just one expansion is Shirodakshaya Vishnu. So Shirodakshaya Vishnu is one expansion. Krishna is saying, Eka Amshena Sthito Jagat. Now here, Krishna is the cause of all causes. Krishna has told that very clearly, Aham Sarvasya Prabhu. And Jiva Swami uses this verse to establish how Krishna is the source of everyone, means that Krishna is the source of Vishnu also. Normal idea within Hindu culture is that Vishnu has 10 incarnations and one of them is Krishna. So that is not an entirely incorrect understanding, but that has to be understood in the proper context. Let's try to understand that point of view. How actually is Krishna the source of Vishnu, or is Vishnu the source of Krishna? So we have to understand that there is the concept of Krishna as the avatari and Krishna as the avatar. So Krishna, the avatari, is the source who is present eternally in the spiritual world. So that Krishna is actually eternal, and that Krishna is the source of all living beings and all manifestations of Vishnu also. He is eternal. He is existing in the spiritual world forever. So that Krishna is the avatari. He is manifesting the Madhurya Bhav. In the spiritual world, he doesn't manifest so much the Aishwarya Bhav. He is the Supreme Lord. And from that Krishna, what happens is there is expansion where there is Vishnu, there is Brahma, and then there is Shiva. So they are connected with the material existence. Now, of course, from Krishna, it's not that Vishnu comes directly. We just now saw how from Krishna Vishnu comes. And actually, there's not just one, but there are three Vishnus. So now, in this diagram, in the previous diagram, the elaborate chain through which from Krishna Vishnu manifests, that is talked about. And the three Vishnus are also talked about. But here, we are not going into technical details. We are understanding the principle now. So there is Krishna, who is Sarvakarana Karanam, from whom through a chain Vishnu manifests. Now after Vishnu has manifested, after that what happens? Vishnu is in charge of maintaining this material world. So whenever there is danger in this material world, at that time the devatas go to Vishnu for help. And when they go to Vishnu for help, Vishnu seeks their help and gets, Vishnu says that I will help. And how will I help? He says an incarnation will come. So incarnation or avatar simply means that which descends from the spiritual world to the material world. So Vishnu in a sense is from some people's perspective, Vishnu might be the source, because they think that we prayed to Vishnu and then an avatar came. So their idea is that Vishnu is the source. So Vishnu sends his various avatars. But what is not understood is that Vishnu is not so much as a source as a gateway. You know, it's a gateway means that actually the prayers go up from here to Vishnu, and then there are so many avatars up there in the spiritual world, and then according to the specific pastime that is required, a specific avatar comes down. So Vishnu is not the source, but is the root through which the various incarnations come. And from the point of view of people in this world, it is Vishnu was prayed to and then Krishna came. So in that sense, some people may think that Krishna is an incarnation of Vishnu. So from the point of view of limited perspective in this world, it might be true. But beyond the perspective of this world, there is the perspective when we see all of reality. And in that perspective of the complete reality, what we understand is, beyond Vishnu, there is Krishna, who is eternally existing in the spiritual world. And from that world, in that world, he is manifesting 64 qualities, unlike the Vishnu forms which manifest 60 qualities. And he has all opulences. And he is the source of all. In that sense, he manifests the sweetness of Rup Madhuri, Venu Madhuri, Lila Madhuri, and Bhakta Madhuri. These four special opulences. He has that special sweetness of form, Rup Madhuri. And that is not present in any other incarnation. The sweetness of Krishna's threefold bending form, then the Leela Madhuri. Very intimate pastimes Krishna performs, especially the Madhuri Ras, then the Vatsalya Ras, and even the Sakya Ras. They are not so much present in the other incarnations or other forms of Vishnu. And similarly, Leela Madhuri, Venu Madhuri, Krishna has this. Krishna uses his flute, and with the flute he conquers the heart of his devotees and calls all of them. And then there is Rupa Madhuri. So Rupa Madhuri, Leela Madhuri, Venu Madhuri, and Bhakta Madhuri. So he has devotees whose sweetness themselves is so great. Even Lakshmi Devi wants to aspires to have what the gopis are getting. So the gopis are simply cowherd girls. And Lakshmi is the goddess of fortune, but the gopis also, Lakshmi recognizes that what the gopis are getting is so special, and she wants to enter into Rasleela. So these special opulences which Krishna has, others don't have. And that's why our acharyas have described that actually Krishna is very special, and as we are attracted to Krishna. Now this doesn't mean that we look down upon Vishnu. That is not the point. Vishnu is also exalted, and worshipping Vishnu can also take us back to the spiritual world. And we have to understand this very clearly. Otherwise, we will unnecessarily minimize or deride Vishnu Bhaktas. No, that will also take one to liberation. But from the rasa point of view, there is some difference, and we have to recognize that difference. So, Krishna is saying, Ekam Shena, by my a fragment of my opulence, I have pervaded all of existence. So, here, Prabhupada makes the point in the purport that some people say that all gods are the same and we can worship any god. But Krishna is making it very clear that actually he is, or everything else that is existing, that is just manifesting a spark of his splendor. So it's not that everything, worshipping the spark and worshipping the whole is the same. No. They are having only a spark. And then Prabhupada quotes Baldev Vidyabhushan. That ich chakti lesha suryadya bhavantyatyogratejasah yadamshena dhritam vishvam sakrishno dashame archate. So he says that ich chakti lesha, that just by a part of his energy, suryadya, surya gets his power, and bhavantyatyogratejasah, its ugratejasah, its formidable power, its effulgence comes from Krishna's energy. And then further, yad amshe nidhritam vishvam, by an amsha he is sustaining the whole vishwa. So Krishna dashame archate, and therefore that Krishna is worshipable, that Krishna should be worshipped. So now let us move on to the 11th chapter. In the 11th chapter, Krishna speaks primarily about the Virata Rupa. So what is the context here? Krishna has said that I pervade all of existence. So how do you pervade? That is what Arjuna will ask. Let's have an overview of the 11th chapter and then we'll move forward. So 11th chapter is among the longer chapters, 55 verses in this chapter. Third longest chapter in the Gita. 78 chapters is the 18th longest, 78 verses, 18 chapters, 72 verses, second chapter, and 55 verses, 11th chapter. So 1 to 4 is Arjuna's request. Please show me the universal form. Then 5 to 8 is Krishna's description of the universal form. So Krishna, what Arjuna is going to see is so extraordinary that Arjuna needs a context to understand. So before Krishna gives a vision, he gives a description. Okay, this is what you are going to see. And then after that, this is the only chapter in the Bhagavad Gita where Sanjay also comes in again. Sanjay doesn't come in so much. Sanjay has come in the first chapter, second chapter, and then he will come in the 18th chapter. But in between, he comes in the 11th chapter. So, what Arjuna is seeing, that the narrator takes a scene back and says, okay, so Krishna and Arjuna are discussing, and that's what is being reported by Sanjay to Dhritarashtra, and that is what is being discussed by Vaishampayan with Janmejaya. So that is the meta conversation that is happening in the Mahabharata. So in that conversation, till now the focus was on what Krishna is speaking, what Arjuna is answering. Now you take a step backward, and then by this, Sanjay describes what overall is being seen over there. Then Krishna reveals universal form. Then for 5 verses, 9 to 40, Sanjay describes what he's going to see. And then after that, Krishna, Arjuna, when he sees the universal form, he becomes overwhelmed. And he starts describing, and the description soon turns into a prayer. So 15 to 31 is the most detailed description of the Virat Rupa that comes in the form of what Arjuna is seeing, he describes. And there he also describes the Kala Rupa when he sees that. Then after that, at 31, when Arjuna is seeing the Kala Rupa, he becomes overwhelmed and he asks, "Who are you? Please reveal yourself to me." So from 30 to 34, the Krishna's instructions come in. That is, Krishna is saying, "Become my instrument." That is the essence of his instructions. Then 35 to 46 will be Arjuna's prayers. Arjuna will tell what he will start offering prayers, expressing apology, and also seeking the darshan of a Chaturbhuja. So the Chaturbhuja will be revealed in 47th verse. And then after that, Krishna will start speaking, and then Arjuna also speaks one verse, and Krishna speaks again. But the essence of that conversation is from 47 to 55 is pure devotion alone grants all visions, whether of the universal form or of the four-handed form or of the two-handed form, all forms like that. So the chapter starts with the revelation of God in matter, not in the way of vibhutis as was in the 10th chapter, but in the point way of Virata Rupa. So both are manifestations of God in matter, but this chapter will talk about the Virata Rupa. And after talking about the Virata Rupa, then the chapter will move on to describe the manifestation of all forms coming due to pure devotion. So the chapter will culminate in pure devotion. So let us look at the verses. So Krishna, Arjuna will speak right in the beginning. Arjuna vacha madanugrahaya paramam guhyamadhyatma sangitam yattvayoktam vachastena mohoyam vigato mama. So madanugrahaya paramam, so out of your great mercy on me, what have you done? Guhyam adhyatma sangitam, you have spoken about spiritual knowledge to me, which is very guhya, which is not easy to understand. The word guhya has come in the 9th chapter, Raja Vidya Raja Guhyam, and in Idam Tute Guhyatamam. So that 9th chapter and 10th chapter, which ultimately focus on pure devotional service, on Krishna's glories that lead to the glory of pure devotional service, they have been talked about. And Arjuna says, "Yes, I have spoken this. What you have spoken is a great mercy to me." And then yattvayoktam vachastena, that uktam, toya uktam, the words that you have spoken, vachas, what has happened by that? Mohoyam vigato mama, my moha has gone away. Vigata, vigata means to go away. So my moha has gone away. It's interesting that Arjuna is saying that now I have no moha. In fact, this is what Arjuna will say at the end of the Gita, when in 18.72 Arjuna will be asked, Krishna, have you heard properly? And then 18.73 Arjuna will say, Nashto moha smutir labdha. So there also he's saying the same, Nashto moha. And here in 11.1 also Arjuna is saying that mohoyam vigato mama, my moha is gone. So this statement of Arjuna also illustrates the point that at 10.11, when the Bhagavad Gita as Chatushloki is concluded, so at that time Arjuna has accepted Krishna's glories and glorious position, Param Brahma Param Dhamma, he has stated, and that way he has shown that he is established in true understanding. And thereafter, whatever questions are there, they are for Loka Sangraha, for the sake of benefiting others. So he is now thinking about how to benefit others, and accordingly he is asking questions. Mad anugrahaya paramam, so out of your great mercy you have spoken all this to me, and I am grateful to you, and by what you have spoken the moha is gone. So when a teacher is teaching a student, the teacher also wants to know whether the student has understood or not. So the student is telling over here, Arjuna as a student, that yes, my illusion is gone now, and you have been very merciful to me. So actually when Krishna speaks, it's out of his kindness, and that speech removes our illusion.
Bhavapyau hi bhutanam shrutau vistarasho maya tattah kamalapatraksha mahatmyam apichavayam.
So now what all have you spoken?
Bhavapyau hi bhutanam
bhava apya. Bhava means creation, apya is destruction. Bhutanam, of all of existence. Shrutau vistarasho maya, I have heard about it in detail. And tvattaha, and about you also. Oh, kamalapatraksha, oh lotus-eyed one. Mahatmyam apicha vayam, I have heard about your glories also. So this kamalapatraksha is a very surprising and sweet form of address.
There have been many ways in which Krishna has been addressed by Arjuna. Varshneya, Purushottama, Madhava, Keshava, many names have been there.
But this is a very intimate, oh, lotus-eyed one. So normally this sort of address comes in devotional prayers where the Lord's beauty is being talked about. So this is surprising in the sense that soon after this, here Krishna is being referred to as Kamalapatraksha. But soon after that, the Virat Rupa will come, and the Virat Rupa, the eyes are blazing. And these eyes are so blazing that one cannot even look at the eyes. So it's the same God who is so attractive in one manifestation and so intolerably fearsome in another manifestation. So actually, the whole flow of the Gita is taking us towards the intimate understanding, to understanding of God's intimate personality. Towards an intimate understanding of God. And Arjuna's intimate relationship with Krishna is revealed through this address, Kamalapatraksha.
Oh, Kamalapatraksha is lotus-eyed one.
Tattah Kamalapatraksha Mahatmyam apicha avyayam. Mahatmya, your glory. What is the nature of your glory? It is avyaya. Avyaya means it's imperishable. So now what is Arjuna referring to over here? We know that the Guhyam Adhyatma was talked about 9-10 chapters, but what is he saying? Bhavapyau hi bhutanam shrutau vistarasho maya. That the creation and destruction of all living beings has already been talked about. That's referring to 7th chapter, 8th chapter, 9th chapter. 7th chapter, Krishna has said that, you know, everything comes from me and everything is sustained by me and everything returns to me. That was 7.6, he mentioned it. And again in 8th chapter, he talked about the Sahasrayuga Paryanta Mahariyat Brahmano Vidu, 8.17 to 8.19, and then he introduced the spiritual world with 8.20, and especially 9th chapter he has talked about from 9.6 to 9.9, how Prakritin Swam Avashtabhya Visrujami Punha Punha Bhutagrama Mam Kritsnam Avasha Prakritir Vashat. So the creation and destruction, how it happens as a cycle, and how Krishna's abode remains eternal and transcendental, and how Krishna remains the controller of all this cycle of creation and destruction, that has been talked about by Krishna, and that is what is Arjuna referring to over here. So on one side, yes, everything is temporary, and how it is created, how it is destroyed, you explain that to me, and then along with that, your imperishable glories, you always remain udasina vadasinam, you remain detached, you remain transcendental. Mayadhyakshena Prakriti, 9.10 is described also. So you have described all this to me. So Arjuna is saying, yes, I accept this. Now Arjuna is setting up a context for his request. He's saying, yes, there is this destructible material world, and there are your indestructible glory position with your imperishable glories. So now you have spoken this to me. Now I have is building up towards the request. So what will be the request?
Evam etad yathatvam atmanam parameshwara drashtumichhamite rupam aishwaram purushottama evam etad.
So yathatvam, so as you have said, so you are manifest before me. Evam etad yathatvam. Tattvam means, as you have spoken, so you are. So it's a very nice verse, you know, Bhagavad Gita, as it is, we say. So, evam etad yatha tattvam. So, as you have spoken, so you are. So Krishna is telling here, actually it's not that there is some, Arjuna is telling over here, not that there is some higher reality beyond you. Now as you have told me, so you actually are, I accept that. It's a, it's a repetition of, in one sense, of what Arjuna has spoken in 10.15, where he says, Sarvam etad ritam manye, I accept what you say. So as you have spoken, so you are manifest before me. And then at the same time, drashtum icchami, I desire to see something. What? He says, Rupam Aishwaram, your Aishwarya Rupa. So when Krishna is manifest as Arjuna, this is a Madhurya Rupa. It's an intimate form. Krishna is describing the knowledge of his Aishwarya, how he pervades all of existence, how he controls all of existence. But now, he also wants to, he says that I want to see, I want to know more about this form. So, Drashtum Icchami Te Rupam Aishwaram Purushottama, you are Purushottama. So in the previous verse only it was Kamalapatraksha. Yes, you are my intimate Lord, Lotus Eyed Lord. But I also know your position. You are the Supreme Being, Purushottama. So I desire to see your Rupa Aishwarya. So now, if you remember in 9.5, Krishna had said, Pashyame Yoga Aishwaram. So there he had talked about the Yoga Aishwarya. So Yoga Aishwarya refers to the opulence of Krishna as is manifest through the creation, and by which Krishna, we can come to know about Krishna and we can connect with Krishna. There is Yoga Aishwarya. Now Arjuna is saying, I want to see a Rupa Aishwarya. So I want to see that form by which you pervade all of existence. So he says, Ekam Shena Stito Jagat, I pervade and sustain all of existence by just one spark of myself. So what is that one spark? How do you do that? I want to see this. So Rupa Aishwarya, I want to see your Virata Rupa. So let us see now what he says in the next verse. We'll understand this further. And Arjuna phrases his request very humbly. Manyase yadi tachakyam maya drashtumiti prabho yogeshvara to metvam darshayamas adarshayatmanam avyayam manyase yadi tachakyam. My dear Lord, if you think it is possible for me, maya drashtumiti prabho, if you think it is possible for me to see this form, my dear Lord, yogeshvara to metvam. Yogeshwar, O Lord, you are Yogeshwara. So he's saying, if it is possible for you to show it to me, but you, I know that it's possible because you are Yogeshwara. Darshayatmanam avyayam, so your own glory is imperishable glories. Mahatmyam picha avyayam, he is told, the word avyaya he has used in the second verse of this chapter also. Now he's using it again. And he's saying, darshaya, darshaya. So pashyami was there. I want to see. Now if I want to see, how will I be able to see? It's only when you give the darshan. When you reveal, so darshayatmanam avyayam, it's possible for you, so it's possible for you to do it, my dear Lord. What is the question is, whether it's possible for me to see. So if you think it is possible for me to see, then please reveal this form to me. So here, Arjuna exhibits humility. It is, the difference between humility and pride is that humility begs and waits. Pride demands and complains. Pride thing, when we are proud, we think we already deserve something and we don't get it, demand, why is this not coming. So pride demands, and when the demand is not fulfilled, the pride complains. Whereas humility doesn't do that. What is the nature of humility? Begs and waits. Yes, this is what I desire, but then I know I am not qualified. So whenever I become qualified, you can reveal this to me, my dear Lord. Humility begs and waits. That is the difference between humility and pride. So here Arjuna is making a bold request in terms of asking that, please show me the Virata Rupa. But how is he phrasing that request? He's saying it very humbly. It's, my dear Lord, if you think I am qualified, manyase yadi tachakyam, then please reveal it to me. Therefore, please reveal it to me. Now, in the early days of our movement, devotees, when they came, for them, especially Western devotees, it was a radical lifestyle change. They just gave up everything of their past life in order to take to Krishna consciousness. And they all had the expectation that things would, results would come soon. So in fact, many devotees in the 1970s, they think that, you know, within, by the next week or next month, no, we were going to take over the world and the whole world is going to chant Hare Krishna. Devotees had that kind of euphoria, you know, their exhilaration in their outreach. And there were remarkable results which came out through that outreach. But another idea was that not only that Krishna consciousness will spread very rapidly, but the idea was we will also become advanced devotees very quickly. So Hayagriva Prabhu, once he went to Prabhupada and he said, "Prabhupada, you know, I have been following the four regulative principles strictly for 6 full months and chanting 16 rounds also. Still, I have not had darshan of Krishna." So Prabhupada looked at him and became grave. "Still, I have not had darshan of Prabhupada." Just Prabhupada was working on his Bhagavad Gita at that time. So Prabhupada opened a Bhagavad Gita and he showed, "Read this." So he looked at it and he read it out. So it was actually this verse that Prabhupada showed him. "Manyase, if you think I am qualified, then please you reveal yourself to me." So he read it again. He couldn't understand. "What is this, Prabhupada?" he said. And he said, "Prabhupada said, well, go read it again." And he read it aloud. "If you think I am qualified." And they understood, Prabhupada, yes. "If you think I am qualified," that's what Arjuna is saying. Prabhupada said, "Yes. You know, our qualification is not decided by us. Our qualification is decided by Krishna. So it's good that you are desiring to be advanced. It's good that you are desiring to have darshan of Krishna. The desire is good. But a devotee's attitude of humility makes sure the devotee doesn't demand. A devotee desires but does not demand anything from Krishna. We are servants. And naturally because we love Krishna, we want more and more reciprocation with him. So we would like to have his darshan. We are very grateful, delighted, ecstatic if we get that. But that's not a demand that a devotee makes. Service means that we don't make demands, we want to serve. And at the same time, because it's a personal relation, that doesn't mean that we can't have desire. The desire to have darshan of Krishna is not sahajayik. But the demand for that darshan is inappropriate from the point of view of bhakti. So Arjuna is phrasing the request humbly, "My dear Lord, if you think I am qualified, please grant me darshan." Now how Krishna reveals his darshan, we'll discuss in our next class. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.